Today we have an interview with Camilla Chester, who is a local author of fiction for children, and she's talking about her work. And she's also joined by Deborah Heath, who is very much involved with the LitFest on the children's programme. We'll be coming back to Deborah and also to Camilla next week, because they've both been involved in the short story competition for young writers in this area. So, Camilla, you are now a published author.
Yeah.
How many books have you published so far?
This is my first novel, so it's very, very exciting. I have been published before, a couple of short stories, but this is my first children's novel to be published. I've always written, and I used to live in Sheffield, and I moved to Harpenden in 2010. And since I moved down here, I actually left my job in Sheffield and concentrated on trying to get more professional with my writing. So I did an Open University diploma and I joined some writing groups. I'm a member of the Verulamium Writing Circle, which is a St Albans writing group. Got some online groups and I joined the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. And from that sort of the networking and the support led to me being published.
So you've actually made quite a lot of effort to hone your skills.
That's
through
right.
that. Is that what you're doing?
Yes.
Do the ideas change or do you have all the ideas but you can't quite make them work?
Yes, that's exactly right. So you always have lots and lots of ideas and they float around in your head, but it's about having the tools to get it down on paper in the right way. And I think a lot of writers, when they first start out, are quite naive about that process and will assume that because you can write, you can write. Do you see the distinction? And that what you write is worth being published. But actually, like anything, it takes experience and training and practice. And you need to be open enough to share your work to other writers who are perhaps more experienced than yourself that can critique it and offer feedback and then be able to go into the editing process and completely transform your work from what it might first look like.
Well, because what you're saying is what you submit to an editor is not the same as what comes out at the end.
Well, exactly, yes.
Because yeah. The editor is giving ideas or really saying that isn't working, this is going to work better, yeah. Why don't you do this?
The editor's job really is twofold, is to look at what's working in the market at the moment, but also what would work in your own writing. So recognise what you've got and how you can make it better.
If we think of the children's stories that we're going to talk about next time, that's what you were doing, is they're looking at that as editors saying, well, it's really good, yeah. Because it's got a certain talent. We're going to come to your first published book in a moment, and it is for children of what age?
Well, I write for 8 to 12s. This particular book is recommended for 9 plus. And I would even say some 9-year-olds might struggle a little bit because it has a very dark main character. The antagonist is called the Dream Thief, and he's a very creepy ghoul who steals children's dreams and puts them in jars. So we certainly can't have children that still might be experiencing night terrors or any sort of fear of sleeping reading this book, really. It needs to be very secure children. And the language is quite sophisticated in places as well. So it's a challenging read for 9 plus.
What made you want to write for that group, that age group?
I like writing for children that are independent readers and are able to pick up a book and go and sit and read for themselves. And I like the length of the book. So with this age group, you can write sort of around 40,000 words, which is the length that I like to work with, because editing it doesn't feel like such a monumental thing. If you think most adult fiction is sort of 80,000 plus, it's half the length. So it's much easier to manage that length of text. And also they're open to ideas of magic, they're open to crossing genres. You can be very creative with your storylines and your characters, so it's much more fun.
Deborah, you work with kids in lots of different ways,
yeah.
In the music field and the drama, the theatre, in the classroom. How do you find what sort of things they're interested in? Does that emerge from your work? I mean, is that the sort of thing that would inform an author or a potential author?
The play I recently had published is actually for a similar age group, and I suppose my thing is a historical adventure. I think children are always interested in adventure, always, and it can take a very dark direction or it can be quite light-hearted, but they love an adventure story. I also think children seem to like ghosts very much from the research I've done, so I've brought a ghost into my most recent play. I suppose, in a way, it's a bit like having a 12A rating on a book, isn't it? Some children are going to be fine with it, some aren't.
By which you mean it's sort of recommended for that age group, but it's a parental advice is required in some way.
Yeah, well, yeah. Certainly it sounds like this Dream Thief could be quite scary, but it's a lovely idea. I think my 8-year-old would be well up for it.
I was going to ask what influences, I mean, what gives you the right to write for that age group? Have you been teachers?
Yes, I have. Most of the children I work with are much younger. They're younger than 6. I suppose you have children, don't you, Camilla?
Yes, I do.
Probably you write for the stage your own child is at. I mean, each stage is fascinating and terrifying at any time. So I suppose that's where my oldest is at the moment. That must be why I'm writing for that bracket, okay. I suppose. Okay. Yeah.
Yes, I always say that my she's just turned 11. She's my harshest editor.
And what do? You get her to read your stuff?
Oh, they're involved right from the beginning. Yeah. So the idea of Jarred Dreams actually came from a discussion with my own children once on holiday, and we were talking about how would the world be if dreams, obviously, is twofold meaning. It means your what you dream of at night when you go to bed, but it's also your aspirations and your ambition. And what would happen if you took those away from children, and how would the world change? And we created this sort of very grey, flat place. And then who would do such an awful thing and why? And so that's where the Dream Thief was born. So it was actually from a conversation with my children, and they're involved right all the way through.
Give us the title again. It's Jarred.
Yes.
So Jarred.
Jarred
Jarred.
Yes, and it's an interesting one, because some people think it's Jarred, because of course it's the same spelling, so they think it might be Jarred's Dreams. That's why I've put the dreams in jars on the cover. So it means dreams contained within jars, but also the fact your dream has been jarred, it's been stopped. So it's got the double meaning.
Okay. It's a very strong title.
Why did you pick the particular piece that you were going to read to us?
The reason I picked the beginning is because I think that's the part of the book that has to work the hardest. And you have to set the tone of the book and give an idea of at least one of the main characters, and just give a feel of what it's going to be like and lay down the beginning of the story. So that's why I picked it. And also because we've talked a lot about the Dream Thief, who is actually, although he doesn't talk as much as the protagonist, Sade, she tells most of the story because she drives the plot forward. The Dream Thief is the kind of the biggest character in it, because he's the darkest, and it's about the world he's created. So that's why I've chosen the beginning. Chapter 1, Dream Thief. The Dream Thief taps a curled black nail on the glass of the jar. He can see through his almost translucent hand as the dream twitches in response. Flurries of pale green sparks start diagonally out from the dream's core, rebound against its prison and fold back in on it. An ancient label flutters from the jar's surface, landing carelessly on the floor. It is illuminated by the colourful magic from the jars. He reads it. Trudy Dade, age 6, puppeteer dance in Icing Sugar Gardens. He looks at the yellowed paper but has no memory of making the label or stealing the dream. He wonders for a moment about the warmth it may have given him. Other labels lie with it on the cellar floor. Feeling no need to read them, instead he turns away from the jarred dreams, disappointed by their unfulfilled promises, blind to their beauty. The Dream Thief shuffles to the hat stand, roughly grabs his black pull string bag, releasing it from the hook, and opens it. He has packed the things he will need. His dry, ashy food, a flask of water, a child-sized blanket on which to sleep. It's 2 days, 3 at most, so he can afford to travel light, and the going will be easier once he is out of the grey. His bag in order, he hoists it onto his back, adjusting the strings over his shoulders. He reaches for his cloak from the hat stand and throws it over his head and hunched shoulders like a shroud. His ears stick up, so pointed and alert they almost poke through the fabric of his hood. He looks around for an empty jar, but all he sees are dancing lights. The shelves are full of jars, none of them empty. It seems unbelievable, yet it's always so far from being over. Taking one of the few remaining empty jars that he spots on one of the bottom shelves, he ties it to his belt loop under his cloak. Before he leaves, he looks at the only jar that's half empty, and a throaty snort of disgust or perhaps disappointment escapes his thin lips. It stands at the front, apart from the hundreds of other dreams. He approaches it. but is distracted by his reflection against the glass. The skin on his face is a sickly yellow, and it deters him from watching the dream. He looks instead at his deep-set, hooded black eyes, his large, hooked nose and his pointed chin. His reflection moves eerily across the surface of the jar like smoke. He decides against watching the first dream, and instead he leaves quickly by the coal chute as usual. It's night, which is usually the best time, and he sniffs a little dog-like at the damp air. He knows the dream he wants, and he steps out onto the endless grey pavements of Stanbridge into the permanent drizzle to take it, hoping as always that it will feel as good as the first. That first dream gave him a feeling he can never repeat, no matter how many more dreams he steals. Yet he will go on, because he's the dream thief. To rid the world of dreams is his cause, and there is nobody who has the power to stop him.
Yes, it's quite interesting, isn't it, the way you're taking a concept, an idea, and creating a character. I mean, you've given him, he's the narrator, he's got personality, he's got characteristics, and yet it's not a person. It is a sort of...
Yes.
Very confusing.
Yes, and you can do that. Of course, you can do that in fiction. You can do it with objects. You can do it with pets. You can do it with whatever you want. Create a voice for whatever creature you feel like. And so, yes, he's a complete figment of my imagination, my crazy head. But we do bring, because it's such, his chapters are very short, because, and they're a little bit lyrical like that. But in contrast, the main character that tells the story is Sade, and she's very fearless, and she's a very bright, strong girl, 12-year-old girl. And if you write for children, you always bring a strong child protagonist into the book, because you want a child that the children, the readers, will identify with and be able to be rooting for. You've got to have a hero. You have to have
a hero. So that's the conflict in there between the two characters.
Exactly, okay. Yes. And the twist on Sade is that the dream thief cannot steal her dream. So no matter what he tries to do, he can't take her dream, and she is fearless of him. And so that balances out the darkness of the story, and she's very colourful and bright and light herself. So that's how I balanced out the scary stuff.
And what are you going to do within the Literary Festival? You're one of the authors participating in that.
I am, yes. I'm very lucky to have been asked to join in with the festival. I'm very pleased about that. I shall be in the Oxfam Bookshop on Sunday the 10th of July. I will be doing readings. I'll be doing a bit of a workshop with the kids, and I've invented a very creative game called the writing game that I'll be playing with the children, and I'll be there to sign books as well, so hope they can come along. It's at 11:30.
Deborah, how does this work? Does somebody have to get a ticket to go to an event like that?
You can get tickets in two ways. The thing I would advise you to do is to go to our website, where you can buy tickets online. Camilla has kindly donated her time for free, so this event is free, but places are limited, so we need you to get a ticket. Now, with any of our events, if you would like to chance it and turn up, there will be tickets available as long as the event isn't sold out. So you can get tickets on the door, but be prepared to be disappointed in some cases. So we want to encourage people to look firstly at the website and get tickets in advance.
And where else are you doing children's events? What sort of location? So this is Oxfam Bookshop on.
So Oxfam are doing a few events for us. Our main building is St Peter's Church. There's a lovely room called the Octagon Room, which a lot of our children's authors will be doing their workshops in. And also Debenhams Otterway are hosting some events for us, and Waterstones Bookshop. Actually, the Cathedral is also hosting an event, although that's an adult event, and the St Albans Country Club. So things are really spread out, but most of the action is happening around St Peter's Church at the top of town.
And do you have other children's authors in this? You've mentioned a few different authors. Let me just make sure that I understand how many of them are children's authors.
Off the top of my head, there are about 10 children's events. We have a nice range there. There's also an adults programme, which is very strong and very varied, that I can talk about as well. But I think probably the junior school age bracket, there will be the most things for at this time this year.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Let's come back again then, just giving Camilla a little break there, and come back to children's fiction. We've talked about your sort of the way you've approached it, how you needed to go through this training, if you like, these extra skills, that because you found it important, for instance, to be able to read your stuff to other people. Mm. I find that very daunting. It must be quite daunting, wasn't it?
It is in the beginning, like anything, because it obviously you're part of you, isn't it, in your writing. Mm. something, and it makes you vulnerable. But you have to trust that there are other writers that you're talking to, and that they will give an honest opinion, and they will give you constructive criticism. So it's no good just saying, oh, rubbish, boo, boo, boo. You have to say what works and what doesn't work.
As in a group, you know, if you're rotten to somebody, somebody can be rotten to you.
And some groups you don't need to read. Some groups it'll be that you just be able to share your work by email beforehand, for example, and then just give critique when you get back together. Mm-hmm. So you might not have to read it out. But actually, if you want to be a children's writer, you have to get used to reading your work, because when you go into schools, when you talk to children, they want to hear some of your work. So you need to be able to read confidently.
Mm. Just as they said that radio was going to be killed by the visual media, so apparently books were going to be killed by later media, not least the technological stuff, seem to be thriving. There seem to be a lot of books. Somebody must be making some money, because you couldn't put all that effort in, although you get the pleasure of publication, of being published. There must be something in it, not just for you, but I think for the publishers.
Yes.
Seems to be a massive amount of books being produced all the time.
Yes, yeah, and in fact, it's astonishing, actually, the numbers of books that are published on a weekly basis, and it's quite hard to sell books because the market is quite flooded. But I think there's something about holding a book, particularly for children. They like the tactile feel of a book. They're quite visual. They like this much more push now to have illustrations. My book's got a few illustrations through the book. Even for older readers, they're enjoying more seeing pictures in. And so that means more if you can hold the book and you can physically have it in your hand rather than an e-book. I think e-books are taking off much more. So for the young adult market, and certainly in adult fiction, e-books are doing really, really well because they're so cheap and easy and convenient. But I personally don't think the book will ever die, because it's something so lovely about... Oh, it's nothing like getting a new book, is there?
And the smell of it is lovely, isn't it?
That's the old joke, isn't it? You don't like the Kindle because of the smell. You say, well, it doesn't smell exactly. That's the point. What are you going to do next? What's next?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question. So I have another book waiting, which is very different to this book. So I'm seeing how sales go of this one and whether we'll publish the second one. And then I'm working on a third book at the moment called The 13th Wish, the premise of which is about a magic bed. Again, it's connected to dreams. If you sleep in the bed on your 13th birthday, your dream becomes real in a real world. And then if you fall out of the bed, you get stuck there.
Oh, I'm frightened.
I can't wait.
And the second book that I've just finished writing, I entered it into Chicken House, actually, but it didn't get longlisted, sadly. So I do know what it's like to be in a competition and not actually...
Oh, so do I. It's horrible, isn't it?
Not nice. I mean, Jarred Dreams I was lucky with, because the National Literary Trust did a competition for the New Author Award and it got shortlisted in that. So that's quite a nice kudos for the book. But the second one didn't do so well, but that's called Eats, and it's a very different story again. It's about two boys that live in a care home. They win a prize, a cooking competition, and they go to a very ridiculous celebrity house full of caricature chefs and have to live. Very strange, bizarre things happen to them while they're there. So it's very quirky and slightly odd David Walliams kind of stuff. So very different to the first one.
Thank you very much, both of you, for coming in. We'll give the website address for the Literary Festival at the end, as well as all the repeating, all the details and times and everything else that's gone. But thanks very much. We wish you best of luck with your writing, but also with the festival.
Thank you very much.
Well, thanks to Camilla and Deborah for being with us today. They're back again next week because they're bringing us the results of the short story competition that they were both involved in. This is a competition for young writers aged around 10 or 11 in the St Albans area, and we've got the results. We've also got the stories read by a couple of young readers. But of course, that's all part of St Albans Literary Festival, which is about to open. It's from July the 4th to July the 10th this year. This festival has been on once before in 2014, so this is its second round. It'll do it every 2 years, provided they can keep the sponsoring and keep the energy going, because of course it's run by volunteers. It tries to bring together the best local and UK authors in a mix of genres, and it says here the festival is a celebration of literature in all its forms, from chick lit and crime fiction through to journalism and poetry. Now, the best place to go to look, see what's going on, is the website www.stalbansliteraryfestival.co.uk.